Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tennis superstar Venus Williams is a global icon and amazing athlete. At 30, she's still winning top tournaments, the French Open just last month. But she's also looking around, not to quit tennis, she says, not yet, but at what else is out there in the world and how sports stay with men and women long after they leave center court. This hour on Point, a conversation with Venus Williams on sport, life, and what comes next. Five-time Wimbledon singles winner Venus Williams joins us now from Los Angeles, the kid out of Compton who, along with Serena, made it to the very top of the professional sports world and has stayed there for a long time. She's out with a new book along with Kelly Carter. It's called Come to Win, Business Leaders, Artists, Doctors, and Other Visionaries on How Sports Can Help You Top Your Profession. Venus Williams, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You start writing books like this, everybody's going to wonder if you're ready to get out of the business, become an author, do something else. What does it mean? Are you moving on?
Oh, I am very much enjoying tennis, as I always have, and at the top of the game, and looking forward to even more great times on the court. But my book, Come to Win, was really a way for me to share what I've learned in tennis. And, you know, 5 years down the road, I'm sure I'll have a lot more insights on what I've learned from the game.
You write that an athlete's life, and I guess we all know this, but you and Serena and many other top athletes live it, that your sort of career, the arc of your life and career, has got an odd pacing to it. What do you mean?
Well, I started training at 4 years old, so I'm 26 years into my job.
Whereas and you're only 30 years old, right?
Only 30 years old. Most people don't even start training for what they're doing until 18. So there is definitely definitely a very early arc, but when you're done with the game, you have more than half your life left to live. So you got to be proactive about who you are, who you want to be, and what you stand for once the game is done.
We're going to look out at you've talked to almost 50, you know, very big names here. People thinking about how sports helped shape their life and their values. I mean, all over the place, from Vera Wang to Denzel Washington to Bill Clinton. It's really quite the crowd that you chatted with and brought their thoughts back. But I was really interested as well about your own youth with Serena, the rest of your family, your sisters. And you know, I'm sure people look at your career and wonder, would I want to do that? The glory would be great, but my goodness, what a lot of work for such a long time. When you look back on it, was it worth it? Would you do the same thing with a child of your own, Venus?
I don't know if I could have the energy my parents had because it's a lifestyle and a full-time job. But I wouldn't do it any way different. It's a great experience as a young person, learning about life. And as a young person, too, you have so much energy. You can go all day. So it's really the perfect time to really get started with your life.
We're going to go back and talk and hear about some of the people you talked with, but I wish you'd take us back just a little bit, because I think now people associate with very glamorous settings, you know, whether it's Wimbledon or you name it. It's a pretty glossy world of tennis. But you came up doing when you were 4 years old, that practicing was in Compton and Watts. I read back your dad saying, you know, it was a radical neighborhood, a lot of dope is sold, you know, gangs looking out for folks and tough courts there. What was your life, your family's life like in those years?
Well, yes, Compton is definitely not Bel Air, but it's where I grew up, it's where I'm from, and I'm extremely proud to represent where I'm from. I was just talking to one of my sisters the other day just about growing up there, and really when you're there, it is where you are. And we had a very positive lifestyle of school first, and homework, and tennis. So we were extremely busy. Yeah, a lot of people come from there. A lot of the women on the WTA tour come from, you know, former Soviet countries, the Ukraines and the and all these places. So
from tough,
a lot of us
from
came
tough situations.
Tough situations. Mm-hmm. A lot mm-hmm. of places that aren't ideal, and I think a lot of times those are the kind of places that really produce true champions.
And was yours really tough? Was your family right in the middle of it? Did you think of yourself, you and Serena and your sisters, as, you know, ghetto kids?
You know what? Ghetto's the best place to be from. I think it's important to see all walks of life and know both sides. I think it makes me the most diverse person that I am today, because I'm up for anything. at the same time, I was where I was. I didn't think of it as a ghetto, a good place or a bad place. Like I said, we didn't have rough times in that sense. We weren't caught up in the thick of a lifestyle that you can lead in a place like Compton.
You're in a pretty different lifestyle now, and the whole tennis world is pretty different, pretty rich, pretty glossy. Do you sometimes, when you're out there, you, Serena, the, I don't know, Ukrainians, you name it, up from tough circumstances that you play with, you roll your eyes at some of the kind of luxury trappings of professional tennis?
I wish it was as luxurious as you describe it. Obviously, it's a
but
dream
the
come true.
The locker rooms aren't fur-lined and gold-plated?
At Wimbledon only.
Right.
But it's a very focused lifestyle. When you wake up every morning, it doesn't matter if you're taking time off. The first thing you think of is tennis. All the hours that you put in, it's a very focused lifestyle. There is obviously a lot of perks that come with it. For example, getting a chance to play these tournaments that you trained for all of your life, and even to win them at times. But it's a very focused lifestyle, very disciplined. Most of the players are very low-key. We're all pretty low-key.
You're talking in your book, Come to Win, with people about life philosophies, and you say right at the top of the book that your dad got you thinking in that way, not just you, but all your sisters, early on, that you'd have family meetings where you'd sit down and he would kind of push you to think about the big questions of your surroundings. Like what, Venus?
Yes, my dad was a modern-day Aristotle. So what can I say? I was very young, 7, 8 years old, and he'd ask these questions, and I didn't know how to answer them. I was very confused. So, you know, I would copy my older sister's answers at the time. But later on, looking back, when he would ask us questions of why, if you give someone something, it's better to not give them something, but to actually have them work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And at 7, you don't understand those things. But as you get older, you understand how I understood how my dad taught us to think and to think for ourselves and how to help ourselves.
You say he asked questions like, why is it that the poor person stays in the ghetto and the rich person gets richer? He was looking out for his big chance, and he spotted it in tennis. Can you remind us of where that lightning bolt came to him from? He wasn't a tennis player. You hadn't been. I mean, you were too young, but how did that come into your lives?
Yes, he wasn't a tennis player, but he was obviously a natural athlete. My mom was, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he just saw tennis as an opportunity for us to do something special and to really obviously do positive things in our life. And it's been an extremely positive experience, probably beyond what any of us could have thought, especially since Serena and I are a team. It's just been amazing. But he would make everything a lesson. Like, we would watch Cinderella, and he would ask us, what was the most important thing Cinderella did? So we'd have to figure
what
it
was
out.
It? Who knows?
That she always said please and thank you. So it was important to be humble and to say please and thank you and try to be the most polite person in the world. So he always had a lesson in everything.
And he said that literally. He also thought entrepreneurially himself. I mean, from what I read, he saw the big winnings that were in tennis, looked at you, his young daughters there, and said maybe this is a way to go. And he coached you to think entrepreneurially all the way along, like many of the people in your book have done.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I talk about that a lot in the book in the beginning. In my part, obviously, the other part of all the other contributors are much more important, at least to me. But I talk about a lot of the things that that he taught us. And he was a different kind of person. Growing up, he would tell us that we would make it to Wimbledon, that we would win, that we would be number one and two. So when you're only 9 years old, your parents are everything to you. So we believed him. So we just thought, oh, yeah, we'll do it. So it's definitely was a new way of thinking.
And you did it in grand style. We've got callers lining up for you already, Venus Williams. Jerome in Boston, you're on the air with Madam Williams.
Hi, Venus. I'm very happy to talk to you, actually. I have a question. You are very humble and very nice and never draw attention to yourself. Where does it come from?
Wow, I think my family really keeps me grounded. My sisters, my mom, my dad, we all keep each other in the right spot, in the right frame of mind. And I think it's at the same time a personality thing. I love my job and it's in the spotlight for sure, but I'm not really a spotlight kind of person. So it's definitely interesting thing, I guess.
But no attention to yourself? I don't know about that. French Open, you created quite a stir with your sort of flouncy, I don't know, sort of a Moulin Rouge nightie out there on the court, but they were going crazy. I see London, I see France, I see Venus underpants the sports writers had on their headlines. You got some flair too.
It is a personal style thing. I do like to reveal who I am on the court with my style. And the outfit was very French. Lace. It was like a continuation of the can-can dress.
Black, red piping, and flesh-colored shorts beneath. You were revealing.
Yes, so fun. I enjoyed that dress. And I guess, what can I say? I had this vision for what I wanted the dress to be, and it went above and beyond what I ever thought it could.
I guess it worked. You won. Venus Williams is with us this hour, tennis superstar, fashion entrepreneur, author of the new book, Come to Win. This is On Point. Venus, we're so glad to have you here. We've got lots of questions about you and your life and Serena and all that, but you've been talking with a lot of people as well. I mean, about what sports have meant in the fullness of their life, not just in their big years of game playing. I mean, you've got Jack Welch and Meg Whitman and Magic Johnson and a whole lot more. Did you go out and sit down with these people and talk it through with them?
Yes, absolutely. Never in person. I wish it could have been that way, but obviously everyone in the book is extremely busy, and, you know, also I spend 10 months of the year on tour, so.
Still, when you make the call and say, can we talk, I guess they're pretty pleased to say yes to Venus Williams. Who wouldn't want to talk with Venus for an hour?
Well, I hope that helped, but obviously there was a wish list, and the thing that everyone had in common was that they were rule breakers in what they do. They were entrepreneurs. They broke barriers, outstanding, and also that they played sports. So obviously I was a little bit nervous during the interviews, or anxious beforehand.
Mm-hmm. You might well have been. I mean, you're talking with, big shots here, but you're kind of a big shot yourself. You talk with Bill Clinton. I thought that was funny to me at first. I don't think we really think of him as an athlete, but he was pretty clear with you. He wasn't really, and nevertheless, he took lessons away from the games. He did play rugby when he was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford. He said they put him on the team just because he was big, but his number one lesson was what?
Never quit. Number one lesson, never quit. He talks about how he played a rugby game and how he had a concussion, and he asked the coach, what should I do? I'm dizzy. He said, the coach said, get back out there. So
I'm not sure doctors would support that these days.
I don't think so, but the whole spirit of never quitting, and by the end of the game, he had multiple injuries, and I definitely don't recommend that, but he learned a lot from the sport, and not everyone got to that Olympic level or that championship level, but what it's emphasizing is what you learn from sports, the perseverance, the never-say-die attitude, learning how to deal with defeat and knowing that it's not the end of the world, that you can come back stronger and better and learn from it more than from a win.
Vera Wang, big fashion designer. You've got a foot in that world. I didn't know she had a background in sports, in figure skating.
Exactly. And before the book, I had no idea either. Everyone knows her for her wedding gowns and for her cutting edge fashion, mm-hmm. but no one knows her for her figure skating until now. So she was a very very competitive figure skater, very, very good, actually, kind of coming close to the Olympic level, but she decided to go in another direction. So it was an amazing story also, and interviewing her was great. We got so much information. She's an amazing woman.
And, you know, a lot of these people were in business, no small number, and the entrepreneurs in particular who talked with you about failure, I found that very interesting. You just mentioned defeat, but, you know, a lot of them talk about how you learn from failure, and in your preface, you're really struggling with that, because I guess when you're on the professional tennis circuit, embracing failure is not something that really gets promoted.
No, and it's something that I learned early on. In the beginning, when you first start, you don't really know how to win. You don't really know how to lose. But there are those losses that propel you to a level if you allow it, if you learn from it. And I've had those losses, especially early on, where I felt like, hey, it's make or break. I have to either move forward or stay where I am. And after that, I really went to the level of winning championships. So a loss is not a negative. It can actually get you to that next level if you allow it, if you learn from it. I think one of our contributors, Donnie Deutsch, he said the only tragedy in losing is if you don't learn from it.
Venus Williams is with us. Her new book is Come to Win. We've got lots of listeners who want to talk to you. Boca Raton, Florida. Paul, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Hi, Venus. Venus, a couple years ago, I was walking down the sidewalk in Delray Beach, where I used to live, and I said, you know what, that guy looks familiar. And then I said, hi, Mr. Williams, and he was just very gracious, and he talked to me a couple minutes and just kind of talked about how you and Serena were doing between Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. I was curious, what is your father's involvement with both your careers now?
Right now, it's, first of all, hi, you're at home. I'm just living up the street in Gardens.
Palm Beach Gardens, Florida.
Palm Beach Gardens, mm-hmm. Florida. My dad is still our coach. We just took him to Wimbledon. He coached us through singles and doubles. So he's very involved, and he is so committed. He'll say, I'm ready to practice at any time, so if it's that's midnight, I'm not doing anything. He is so motivating, too. He's been just the catalyst to my career, along with my mom. And a lot of times, especially at this professional level, you know, there's the little things that make a huge difference. So just someone just saying, oh, you played really well today, even though you may not think you played well, makes a huge difference. So just those little things that a coach can provide you, he does that.
How did he manage over the years? A lot of people asked me about this when they heard you were coming on, you know, to sort of balance coaching Venus, coaching Serena, you know, that chemistry of the two of you he was pushing out there, and then the two of you with each other. I mean, you and Serena share a house in Palm Beach Gardens now, I think, the house of the sisters or something. I mean, a big house. I mean, you're close, but how do you pull that off? You've got to be so psychologically ramped, and you're often pitched against each other. How do you do that?
We've had a very long history of playing against each other. We played in our first junior tournament. I was about probably 10. She's about 9. So, and we played so many matches in practice. So at the end of the day, we're actually used to being across the net from each other. And that's how we grew up. And that's really what we dreamed of, was being number one and two in the world. Of course, we both dreamed of being number one, not two. But we also dreamed of playing in these major finals and playing against each other. So to actually have it come true is like, wow, instead of, oh, no, we have to play each other.
Is there a difference in the way you prepare yourself for a match against Serena as opposed to any other, psychologically, as opposed to anybody else?
Not necessarily. I mean, obviously, with each opponent, you will probably practice a few different plays, different for each opponent, just to kind of hopefully expose their weakness or make a play that will put them in a bad position. So I do the same thing if I'm going to play her.
But do you have to get your dukes up in the same way? I mean, normally you go out there to win at all costs, I assume. Is it the same with Serena, or is there a little bit of, well, if I don't, she's Serena, it's okay? Or do you have to put that away?
No, I guess if it's in a final, there is some consolation that Williams is on the name. One day it could be mistaken for Venus or Serena, and 20 years down the road, no one will be keeping count. So Gosh, I think the biggest issue is with Serena. She's just capable of hitting any shot at any time on the court. So that's something I have to be ready for. That wow, she might come up with something out of her back pocket, so I have to really be on my toes.
Let's go to Orangeburg, South Carolina, and Lee. Lee, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Venus. I just wanted to say that I am so proud of you, and I'm proud to be a black woman. You have really done us good. Thanks for keeping your nose clean and making us proud out here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Proud to see you there as a black woman, says Lee. I don't know. What about race and your career, Venus? You and Serena have broke ground on that front. Is it something that's still front and center in your mind, sort of on the side somewhere? How do you carry that piece of the Williams story?
Well, Serena and I are very proud of who we are as African Americans, as women, as Americans. And we represent ourselves and our family and where we're from, everything. So we do our best to represent that and at the same time, our best to be ourselves and who we are and represent who we are as individuals, too. So definitely a lot of things going into that. But at the end of the day, we just like to work hard.
When you look out at other prominent African Americans, you talk with a number in the book, Magic Johnson and others, but we also have the president sitting in the White House there. And, you know, race big in the headlines in the last couple of weeks here with Shirley Sherrod and that whole story. I mean, how do you look at what it means to be African American these days? Is it a privilege? Is it a burden? Has it changed? How do you think about Barack Obama sitting in the White House with that piece of the American story as part of what he brings there?
As a country, I think all over the world, people look at America and what it represents for a few centuries now, opportunity and the opportunity to be on an equal playing field. And as we know that the world isn't a fair place even here, but it does show that you can do anything and be anything. And obviously with Barack Obama breaking barriers that were very difficult, he's been amazing and also just amazing as a president. And just as far as being African-American today is definitely a lot easier than, let's say, my dad who grew up in Louisiana in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things have changed from that time. And, of course, I think for me, there is no other way. I love who I am, and I embrace other cultures too to learn about who they are.
Do you think there's been some talk in African American circles that the president hasn't made enough of race? He's walked sort of too carefully around it since he came to the White House. There were real high expectations of how he might lift the torch there. Is it enough just to be there? Should he talk more about it? Should he be a bigger educator on that front, Venus?
Well, race isn't an easy subject now. You know, 20, 30 years ago, it was a bigger subject, but now discrimination seems to be a little bit more subtle. So it's not something easy to really point your finger at. But also, I think he has a lot of things on his plate that he's dealing with that might be a little bit more important than race. Obviously, the economy, the way it is, and people needing jobs, I think might be a little bit more important. And there's a lot of things to deal with as a president. I don't think I could do the job.
Well, it's a big one. It's a big one. Moses in Boston, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Venus. Venus, I just want to say I got an opportunity to play with you and your sister when I was younger here in Boston at the Sportsman's Tennis Club. And thank you so much for continuing to do the work that you do. That meant a lot to my brothers and I. But my question was in regards to race, how have you and your sister remained so encouraged despite the various misperceptions or misunderstandings that have been thrown at you through racial lenses, perhaps, or through socioeconomic lenses?
Yes, good question, and I hope your game's going well. Obviously, a lot of times people will prejudge you because of where you're from or who you are, what you look like, and that's not even always a conscious thing of people judging you. So, I personally learned not to judge someone because I've been judged so many times. And I think over the years, there may have been some misconceptions, but I think over time, people know who we are and who we stand for. We're just hardworking people who win. Sometimes we lose. Sometimes we're emotional. Sometimes we live our life on the stage. And I think people just see us just as two sisters trying to do our best. So at the end of the day, I think people see us for who we are.
What's your everyday life now? Let's say when you're home in Palm Beach Gardens in Florida. You're in the big house there with Serena, and you're not at that instant out playing a tournament somewhere. What's the Williams sisters' life like at home?
For the most part, I'm training. And if we're both home together, Serena always cooks. We don't take ourselves too seriously, so there's a lot of laughing in the house. We have a lot of dogs. They're not always very good.
That takes some attention. You're together. You own a chunk of the Miami Dolphins. That's got to take some of your attention in football season and beyond. And you, in particular, have a couple of businesses on the side, well-known for a fashion design business, also an interior design business. What do you do with those, Venus?
Yes, I have an interior design business called V-Star Interiors, and we do residential and commercial design. I love design, as you can tell on the court.
Yeah.
Yes, and I love interior design also. So we have a lot of fun. We've worked with a lot of athletes and done businesses and homes. So it's definitely one of my loves, probably more than fashion, especially emerging in these latest years. So it's very interesting. I'm also have a clothing company called 11, and it's what I wear on the court. So I'm always having fun with new designs and sketching new things and kind of preparing for what I'm going to wear on the court. So I stay busy. I stay pretty busy.
We've got questions from all over the place here and all kinds of questions. Here from the website is Lisa, and she writes to you, as another tall African-American female tennis player, 6 feet, I often find it difficult to find tennis outfits that properly fit. This is in your business line, Venus. Did you design your clothing line to cater specifically toward other tall female players? You're 6'1", I guess.
I am 6'1". And when you're tall, your size is always changing because everyone cuts different. So it's a challenge. You can't just say you're one size. But definitely try to cater to everyone, small, tall, large. So I hope everyone will be happy with it.
And are you going to continue that on the other side of your career? How many more years are you putting in on the tennis front?
It's hard to say. As long as I'm at the top of the game, there's not really a huge need to think about how long. It's been such a huge part of my life. It's hard to see myself not doing it, but there will be a time that I won't. Serena and I, we always joke about, oh, we'll just keep playing doubles.
Right.
If we don't play singles, we'll just team up
doubles
together and play doubles. Hopefully our serve will still be fast.
Did talking with all these business people who are out there in the world, did it make it look like someplace you at some point are going to want to go? Or did you think, oh, I better brush up my game and stay on the court because that looks more fun?
Absolutely. I do look to my life after tennis, and talking to everyone in the book, everyone who played sports, like, for example, Phil Knight, who ran mm-hmm. track.
And head of Nike now.
Exactly. Head of Nike now. Revolutionary to sports. It's been amazing. And how he was an athlete, didn't go to the Olympics, but he did something else. So that's definitely a role model for me as an athlete and for anyone as a person, and what sports can contribute to his life. I found his story very touching, actually, in his account. And for me, there is that, obviously, a thrill and the nerves and all those adrenalines and emotions you get from sport and then reaching the top and is amazing. But at the same time, business can have those same kind of things. Like at V-Star, when we sign a contract and getting there is also a thrill.
Question here for you, Venus, from Julie, and she says, I'd love to know how religion has played into her tennis and life. I understand she's very devout. You say right in your acknowledgments, I'd like to thank my God Jehovah for the blessing of life and all his undeserved kindness. I think your family's been Jehovah's Witnesses. How has that played into your life, your sport?
Well, I think it's given me a lot of balance, definitely, to know there's something more important than what I'm doing on the court and what I'm doing in my own life. It definitely puts everything into perspective. Also, I think it's kept me grounded and also kept me in the game, to be honest. Everyone that I grew up with that were prodigies or kind of in that same group I've been in, they've kind of had a lot of problems. And I definitely credit having my easygoing life to really being spiritually balanced.
When you were kids or even now, did you do the Jehovah's Witness thing? Did you go out door to door and talk to people?
Yeah, we went out, and I still go now if I have a chance. I'm not as at home as much, so that's tough being on the road a lot. But I enjoy it, and I think when you believe in what you do, it's enjoyable.
Here's another question with a kind of religious element, something else maybe as well, but this is from Maria. It says, I want to appreciate Venus for the stand she took in the Dubai Championships, refusing to play unless Israeli Shahar Peer was allowed to play. Peer had previously been denied a visa to the United Arab Emirates because she was Israeli. Maria says, because of your stand, she got a visa. Thank you for doing the right thing, standing up for the Jewish people. Your actions were noted. Tell us about that decision.
Yes, you know, in the certain parts of the world, people are not at peace with each other. So, unfortunately, Shahar Peer didn't get a visa to play in a very large tournament in Dubai. And unfortunately, the players didn't know about it until really the day the draw was made. Mm-hmm. So it was a definitely a difficult position, but we ended up playing the next year in the semifinals of the tournament. So it was a full 360, really, that she was playing the tournament that she played extremely well, beat everyone, and then we played each other. So it was definitely a very special moment for us. And for me, it was just a thing that anyone would do for their fellow person and for a fellow player.
Take a stand there. Alan in Charleston, South Carolina, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hi there, Venus. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've got two questions. One is, Venus, aside from your family and your faith, who are your heroes? Who inspires you? Who would you like to emulate? And my second question is, where is your favorite place in the world to play tennis?
Great. Thanks, Alan. Venus, could you catch that?
Yes.
Heroes and favorite place to play tennis. Thanks, Alan. What do you say, Venus?
Heroes are my sisters and my parents. I definitely look up to them. They were everything my family growing up, and they still are. And we still copy each other and spread rumors about each other. So it goes both ways. And what else? Gosh, my favorite place to play tennis is probably Wimbledon.
Because of the trophy that may come at the end, or because the actual location, I don't know, the people, the place, the setting?
All of the above. And the trophy is actually called the Venus Rosewater Dish.
Yeah.
So
got Venus right in the name.
It's perfect for me.
Serena doesn't mind it either. You mentioned your sisters, and I have to admit, you know, I'm not a tennis player, and I didn't know that much about your sisters. I didn't even know you had other sisters. Introduce them to us. There's Serena and three more.
Yes, Serena is number 5 on the totem pole, and I'm number 4, so mm-hmm. We were very low ranked. So that means we didn't get to choose what we watched on TV or any of those things growing up.
Tell us about your three older sisters. What are their names? What are they like?
Yes, and Lindrea is next. She's number 3, mm-hmm. And she's writes music. She's extremely talented. And Isha is number 4, or sorry, number 2, mm-hmm. And she's like a lawyer and business major and just extremely smart, the mm-hmm. smartest in the family probably. And she also helps us with our business. And our older sister, Yatunde, she passed away, but she has 3 kids that we all take care of and spoil.
And your mom, Oracine, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, Oracine, you got it.
Tell us about names in your family. I mean, there's all kinds of names in this world, and there are many beautiful kinds, but you've got a really distinctive thread of names. You and Serena and your sisters and your mom. What's the background there? Is this family tradition? Was this your mom looking for a particular kind of, you know, style to the name she gave her five daughters?
She just wanted to be different. She wanted our names to stand out, and she wanted our names to really be us. So she definitely had imagination, and I think our names really are us. And apparently I was almost named Ebony, but she chose Venus instead. So my middle name is Ebony.
How do your sisters deal with your success, yours and Serena's success? I mean, they may have had their, you know, own successes, no doubt, but it's pretty hard to, if you're competing, it's pretty hard to compete with the kind of limelight that you two get in sports. How do you work that out within the family?
Well, thankfully, we don't compete with each other. So that helps a lot. And they've been so instrumental for us, especially when we have a tough loss. It's hard for Serena and I, and the first thing we get is a phone call or a text from my sister saying, "You're the best. You'll do it next time." And I can't say how much that means. So they've been just amazing.
Let's go to Martha in Nashville, Tennessee. Martha, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hi, Venus. I enjoy so much watching you and Serena play tennis, and think you're just terrific, and I'm looking forward to reading your book. I have a couple of questions. Were you and Serena inspired by African-American tennis players that came before you, such as Arthur Ashe, and I can't remember the name of the women players. Was it Wilma Rudolph? Or I'm sure you know them and have read about them. And enjoy watching you play doubles. And my other question is, are you personally involved in U.S. tennis by promoting young people, such as Chris Evert, which is one of my favorites, did, serving on boards or promoting them in other ways, advertising or whatever? Thank you very much for your answers.
Thanks, Martha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely African-American players. Althea Gibson from the 50s. And Arthur Ashe from the 70s, and a lot closer to my era that I actually got to see them play tennis actually was Zena Garrison. So those were some players that have been monumental in African American tennis. And second question, getting involved with young people, I do a lot of kids clinics. I don't necessarily involved with associations, but I do get out there and teach a lot of kids who haven't played before or kids who have played, and we have a lot of fun. I love doing that.
Althea Gibson, there's a name from the past and a great one. Frank in Boston, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Hello, Venus and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi, Venus. You came to Boston. You were great. My daughter got to hit balls with you. It was absolutely wonderful. She'll never forget it. I work for the Boston Police Department here. And we put together a program, since you speak of how you cater to these kids. And we take inner-city kids by van load from the projects to Sportsman's Tennis Club, where we teach them for 2 hours on Fridays and Saturdays. And at the end, we have a relay race to target obesity and keep them fit. And then we have like 50 pizzas delivered, all free of charge. And it's worked out well. You know, to get a kid to come to the police station doesn't happen too often. Because, of course, their reaction is, "I'm not going there." But it's been really good. It's been very successful. Is there any ideas that you have that you might, you know, want to betray upon us that could make it even better? What do you think?
How to get them in the sport? What do you say, Venus?
That already sounds amazing. The program. I'm not sure how much more I can contribute to that. Wow. That's great. I think as many young people as we can expose to sports, a healthy lifestyle, and positivity is great. So I think you're already doing a great job.
A lot of pizza, a little pizza goes a long way,
it does.
Too. Not to mention if Venus Williams is batting around balls once in a while. You've got a lot of on this positive front in your book. Sir Richard Branson, you talked to, founder of the Virgin Group, and talking about how it's just more fun to say yes than no. Has he really got a sports background?
Well, he's been great. We've done a lot of things with him with the WTA and with Wimbledon. I see him every year at Wimbledon. He's a great personality, and he's just a very alive person. So it was great to have him in the book after seeing him so many years. But, I mean, everyone's a sports person in the book.
What about Magic Johnson? He's truly a sports person, and he's really gone big in business, and business that goes into the inner city. What did you take away from him in particular, Venus?
Well, obviously, he's been an athlete who's made a transition to being an entrepreneur. So he's reinvented himself. And sometimes we have to do that, whether we're an athlete or whether we're a person who has to make a transition or our jobs become obsolete. We have to reinvent ourselves. And a lot of times you can be even more successful at that. So he's done that and done a great job and still gives back to the community. So he's definitely one of the best contributors to the book.
Denzel Washington in your book talking about he was the little guy. I think he was a halfback or fullback something, but he was the little guy on the team and he just chose not to think about his size.
Exactly. Another great contributor. He has so much personality and so much that he gives to the book. And sports also changed his life, too. He went on to become an Oscar winner. Not many people get to do that. But it definitely helped him in that direction that he went into.
Banu in Southborough, Massachusetts. Banu, you're on the air with Venus Williams.
Well, hi, Venus. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
The question I have is, I have three young children. My son is 7 years old, and he plays tennis. The question is, what is the advice you give for children who play tennis, you know, who want to take it to professional level, but at the same time, when they are playing at a professional level, how should they strike a balance in life so they become a happier and well-rounded individual?
Yeah, great question. And can you great have question. Balance in a life headed, aimed for professional tennis, Venus?
You can definitely have balance, but you also have to be very dedicated to what you do. Just like anything else you want to be good at or great at, you have to put your heart into it and work hard. But at the same time, you balance it off with off time. And I've found also that that's just as important as the time that you spend on the court, to just feel refreshed, to refresh your body, to still love what you do. So I would definitely recommend 2 days off a week as a kid. Let them have fun. At the same time that they're practicing, if you're practicing at a park, give them breaks to go play in the little sandbox or the, what do you call it these days? I haven't played in those in a long time.
Oh, the jungle gym? I don't know.
The jungle gym, yep. Things, yes. So give them those breaks and they'll come back and encourage them. Have fun with it. Make it fun. Definitely. Be very constructive with your criticism. Make it positive. Point out the things that they might not be doing as well, but make that a positive, not in a negative way. I think that's important, too, to still keep it fun.
But I guess some people will listen. I mean, even just reading what you're writing here, Venus, talking about how in your childhood, yours and Serena's, it was 5 or 6 hours every single day of the year except when it was raining. You learned to love rainy days because those were your only days off. When you look back, what were the things you missed out on with that kind of intense year-after-year training schedule?
I don't feel like I missed out on anything. Some people do. Everyone has a different personality. People perceive it differently. Kids do. I think as a parent, it's important to recognize that each child is different, so you have to treat them a little bit differently and still try to make it fair for all of them. And I know that's not an easy balance, but what else are you doing as a kid? So I had a lot of free time to use it well. And as a kid, you do put in a lot of hours because you just want to train until you don't think. You just hit and you just react. So that takes a lot of muscle memory, a lot of training.
You and Serena moved from California to Florida to be in that sort of high-tier young training world. Is that necessary these days for kids who want to make it up into the professional level? Do you have to kind of, you know, go to these big fancy sports meccas and plug in there, you know, full time?
No, not at all. It's not necessary at all. You can play professional tennis without going to a camp. It's just the route we happen to go to, but definitely not a must.
Let's go to Harry in Burlington, Vermont. Harry, you're on the air.
Hi, Venus. Hi, Tom. I have a question. David Foster Wallace wrote a fantastic article on Roger Federer years ago in the New York Times, and he spoke of the creativity of Federer's game. And I wanted to ask Venus, how does creativity affect your game? Because most athletes, by and large, are thought of as primarily physical beings, and overlooked for their intellectual and creative abilities on the ice or field or whatever. Can you speak to what part creativity plays in your game while you're on the court?
not just form, but creativity. Great. Venus.
Yes, you definitely have to be creative with your plays, and you have to use whatever you have to your advantage. There's players like Roger Federer who love to play with the ball. That's just the way his mind thinks. He likes to play the angles, and he likes to toy with his opponents if he can. I'm a little bit different player. I'm tall and strong, so my strengths are my brawn. So I can overpower you, hopefully. But if I'm not overpowering someone, I have to figure something else out. So my thing is strategy. I'm really good at strategy, and I pick up on my opponent's weakness extremely quickly in a matter of minutes. So before we go out on the court, Serena will ask me, okay, what should I do against so-and-so? Because I always pick up on it very quickly. So I mean, a lot of people don't know that about me, I guess.
Is that just second nature now? Or do you have a kind of brainstorm on the court? Say, oh, there it is. I'm going for that vulnerability.
It's funny. I pick it up in warm-up, and the warm-up is 5 minutes. So after the warm-up's over, I've figured out a lot of their game. And then within the first few games, I figure out their play. So it's like, if you do one play on me, I'll watch it, and the second time I got it. So it's like you can't fool me twice.
Wow. One play, and you're in trouble with Venus Williams. It's been great talking with you. The new book is Come to Win. We wish you great success and good luck, and thanks so much for your time today, Venus. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. So fun. Thank you, everyone.
Tennis superstar Venus Williams joining us there from Los Angeles. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.